This message comes from NPR sponsor FX, presenting Clipped, the story of the 2014 Clippers owner's racist remarks captured on tape and heard around the world. Streaming June 4th, only on Hulu.
Hey, everyone. You're listening to It's Been a Minute from NPR. I'm Brittany Luce. And it is officially my favorite time of the year, fall, which means spooky season. Scary movies, books, shows, you name it, I want it. And it's more than ghosts and gore. Horror holds up a funhouse mirror for our darkest fears and desires.
We do have a human urge to shoot a zombie. Not a person, but somebody who is a threat, who might be wearing clothes like somebody I'm annoyed with.
Recognize that voice? It's the Jordan Peele.
There's a real human release that comes with zombie movies in the fact that we get to hide out, we get to have our weapons and guns, and they're not as smart as us.
Peele is the director behind Get Out, Nope, and Us. I'd argue he revitalized the booming market for Black horror in film. And now he's turning his expertise to the written word and has edited a series of short scary stories called Out There Screaming, an anthology of new Black horror. Today on the show, we're looking at the tenets of Black horror, reckoning with its past and looking toward its future for new possibilities. Jordan Peele, welcome to It's Been a Minute.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
It's good to have you. It's good to have you.
Just you saying that, it feels like I've been here before.
It's been a minute since we've chatted. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like to hear that.
Yeah.
I mean, also too, I mean, just with the theme of this book that you edited that we're going to discuss today, I don't know, I'm very much in the like other realms, other possibilities, other lives, other pasts. Maybe we have been here before. I don't know. Who can say?
I live in these other realms. This is my playground. I love it.
To start off though, I want to ask you a question that has been on my mind, it's been on the team's mind as we're preparing to talk to you. A major theme in horror is the apocalypse. So my very first question is, would you want to survive the apocalypse?
Definitely.
What?
But you say no. You say take me out.
Oh, no. I'm first heat going down.
Yeah, I understand, right? The question is, do you want to witness the horror and be put through the pain and suffering?
Yeah, that, and also too, I mean, for me personally, like, I don't want to, like, the new world that comes after that.
Yeah.
I have poor eyesight. I don't have any of the skills to survive there.
That's true. But all things considered, it really can't be too much worse. I mean, eyesight, that's a trade-off, you know? I mean, that's a sense. So that, I hear you on that.
So talking more broadly about horror, now you've edited this series of short horror stories, and obviously you wrote and directed one of the great ones, Get Out. Since then, there's been a growing market for Black horror in Hollywood and in publishing. And part of what I think made the film work so well was that the horror in the film worked on multiple levels. Like, there was the situational horror, being in this white upper crust environment with your white partner's overeager parents for the weekend, but also the horror of being lobotomized and brainwashed into submission. But there's a cultural specificity there that's part of what made it so scary. It makes me wonder, what constitutes Black horror?
It's hard to answer. You know, in some ways, it's Black authorship, protagonist, Black lead. And the racial dynamic could be front and center, or it can be peripheral.
The subtitle for this book is An Anthology of New Black Horror. And my producer, Alexis, said that that kind of implies that there's an old Black horror. Mm. And she wants to know, and I want to know too, what makes this new?
Mm. This sort of landscape we live in of Black America and what is becoming less and less white America, but we still recognize a strong hold of white supremacy. The dynamic is shifting every day. There are books that are being challenged that weren't challenged a little while ago. What makes it new is that we're living in a new world every day. Upon reading these, you do find that there is the newness of them. These are, for the most part, feel like stories that couldn't be told a couple of years ago because of even the context of the world they're in.
Can you give an example of something that you're thinking about?
A Dark Home by Nnedi Okorafor. The way it combines an ancient African spirit with modern technology and this idea of a smart home is just something that is just so unique to her sort of world builds and just a beautiful story. And so this is just something that feels so fresh to me and so unexpected, and that she's able to pull off essentially dual horror subgenres in here, one with this modern sci-fi and one that feels like it, this other kind of depth to it.
When it came to the short stories and Out There Screaming, was there like a device or a thesis that just bowled you over in editing this series?
You know, there's a motif of eyes that emerges in several of the stories. And it's also a theme in my work and throughout art, but I find it very interesting how there's a really dark association with eyes and vision. And a lot of it is about what we think of as the white gaze or the white supremacist gaze, even in some cases. Part of the Black experience is that our identity is so wrapped up in with how we're perceived and how we're seen and how we're imagined to be because of how we're seen.
No, that's a really good point. When you say eyes, I think of the first story that appears in the book by N.K. Jemisin about a Black cop who sees human eyes in the headlights of cars. As a Black person, you're always the subject, rarely the person who's gazing, rarely the person who's looking.
To just talk for a moment about Get Out and the sunken place, which was this mental prison that the main character, Chris, is sent to. And it involves this idea of being able to look through your eyes, to be able to see clearly, but to not be able to have an effect, not be able to use your judgment or your wisdom or your Blackness to solve this problem.
Right. I wonder, and it's something I've been thinking about, I'd love to get your thoughts on this. For a lot of Black people, real life is scary. Like, real life is scary enough. Like you said at the beginning of this conversation, you're curious to see the apocalypse through because you're like, how could things get worse? But I wonder if real life is scary enough for Black people. Why do we need Black horror?
Well, not everyone does. You know, some people just don't like horror. And well, you know, I have a theory about people who don't like horror. So these are the same people that will watch 10 seasons of Criminal Minds
and
try and act like that's in some dark
stuff. Yes, you know, but, that is interesting.
But you raise a great question. And this was the big debate going into Get Out, that this was an area, grounded horror, as grounded as it could be, that explores suffering Black people, white villainry at its most diabolical. And so my fear was, if this doesn't land right or if this doesn't ring true, people say, what are you doing? And so there was just a faith in this idea that if I pull it off, it will release something. And that's sort of exactly what happened. When we are allowed to process our feelings and our fears in creative ways, I feel like good things happen. Part of what I love about this project, Out There Screaming, is, you know, after Get Out, I was approached by so many people that said, oh my gosh, I've had some story that I've wanted to tell, but I just didn't think they'd ever let me do something like that. Or, oh man, when I saw this movie, I was mad for a second because I wanted to be the one to do it, but then you kind of did it. And now realizing that it's not that everyone had Get Out to make, it's that everyone had an expression of their fear. They had a nightmare that they had built, that they had wanted to show. And you can't ignore your Blackness when you're writing a horror story.
Black horror serves a purpose in that it provides a place for people to, through writing it, creating it, shooting it, directing it, or taking it in, to kind of process this elemental human thing that we all deal with, which is fear.
Yeah, and it's hard to do. You know, when you apply horror to the Black experience, you come up with a lot of nightmarish reality, as you point out. So it's difficult to craft a horror that is also an escape.
Yeah.
And it is not just pushing us into that place.
Well, Jordan, thank you so much for joining us today. It was so great to have you.
So great to be here. Thank you so much, Brittany.
That was director and actor Jordan Peele. Coming up, one of the contributors to Out There Screaming and the scholar of Black horror, Tanana Reeve Du, joins the show to talk horror, leadership models, and her upcoming novel, The Reformatory.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, Discover. Here's a familiar situation. You have a question about your credit card. You call the number for help and can't get a hold of anyone. If only you had a Discover card. With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. A real person. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. This message comes from NPR sponsor FX, presenting Clipped, the scandalous story of the 2014 Clippers owner's racist remarks captured on tape and heard around the world. The series charts the tape's impact on a dysfunctional basketball organization striving to win against their reputation as the most cursed team in the league. Starring Lawrence Fishburne, Jackie Weaver, Cleopatra Coleman, and Ed O'Neill. FX's Clipped, streaming June 4th, only on Hulu. Support for NPR and the following message come from the American Cancer Society. Dr. Alpa Patel leads a team that researches cancer risk factors, and she shares how her team makes an impact.
We always do what we like to think of as actionable science. So the work that we do makes its way to things like nutrition and physical activity guidelines for cancer.org, where millions of people come each year to learn about how they can better prevent cancer.
To learn more, go to cancer.org.
My next guest is an award-winning horror critic and writer with a short story featured in Out There Screaming, as well as an upcoming novel titled The Reformatory. Her name is Tanana Reeve Du, and in these latest stories, she's combining fantasy and family history to illuminate the terrifying reality of Black life. In my interview with Tanana Reeve, she walks me along the delicate line you need to straddle in order to honor a horrific past while giving some satisfying scares. Tanana Reeve, welcome to It's Been a Minute.
Thank you. Very excited.
I like that level of excitement. I can work with that. Okay, to start off, both of the stories that you wrote for this anthology and also for your new novel have to do with your family history. So there's like the heroine of the writer who shares a name with your late mother, Patricia Stevens Du, and who, like the character, was a civil rights activist who sustained eye injuries from having tear gas thrown at her.
Yes.
And at the beginning of the reformatory, you dedicate the book to your mother, but also to your great uncle, Robert Stevens, who died in 1937 at a school for boys, as they called it, that seems similar to the one featured in the book. He was only 15 years old. And also you thanked your father, John Dorsey Du, civil rights lawyer, for his collaboration on this book. I wonder, with what are you trying to work out about your family history through writing these stories?
I'm trying to let people know, you know, this generation that we're standing on had to go through things we can't even imagine. And even though I take reality and then, as I like to say, turn it up to 11 and add the monstrous to what's already terrible, what I really want to show is their strength, because we are losing that history, not just because of the natural tendency every generation has to put themselves front and center. I've been guilty of that too. But there have been actual conscious efforts to erase that history, just as my mother saw those efforts playing out within her lifetime. That's why she wanted to write a civil rights memoir, because we were here. We did this. And I think that's what ghosts are trying to say. I was here. I existed, I suffered, and I just want people to know. And I wanted, in the best way I could, to try to bring it to life. And for me, a story like The Reformatory or The Writer, both of them, I call them Jim Crow horror because they take place during the Jim Crow era.
Yeah, in Jim Crow South.
And Jim Crow, to me, having grown up listening to their stories, is kind of a horror in and of itself. The whole point to me of fantasy and horror is that it blunts the blows a little bit. I'm not afraid of demons. I'm not afraid of ghosts, to be honest. I'm afraid of being pulled over by a police officer. That's something that makes my heart race. So for me, you know, a story about a ghost or a demon or a swamp creature, that's all a relief compared to what the real life horror has been. I was recently at a screening of the horror noir documentary, and there was some lynching footage in the documentary. And it turned out that the woman on the panel with me was related to the man who was being lynched.
Oh my gosh.
Now, that to me was such a vivid example of how we can't just fling images around and not feel like they're going to personally land on someone's actual historical pain or their ancestral memory, even of that kind of pain. I don't even like true crime. So human horror does not interest me in the slightest. Mm. Yes, that's part of the backdrop in the reformatory and the short story, the writer, but the emphasis will always skew toward the fantasy element.
That makes a lot of sense. You saying that is putting, it's like putting words to aspects of certain movies or books or TV shows or short stories that deal in either Black horror or rape revenge that I watched and I was like, watching this doesn't feel so good. So you've unlocked something for me because when I was younger, I mean, truthfully, I couldn't even watch the Thriller video until I was like literally an adult because it was too scary. But as like a grown up, I love horror and I've really grown to enjoy it more as an adult. And I was thinking about why. Like it doesn't give me bad dreams. Nothing. Well, one thing I've always said is that just as a Black woman, I wouldn't end up in a lot of the situations people are in these movies where I'm just like, I wouldn't even do that. I wouldn't even go there. I wouldn't even be there. So I don't even have reason to be scared about that.
I am officially disconnecting from this character's experience because I would never do that. She is no longer representing me or anyone I know.
Exactly. It's like, you're on your own now, girl. Like, I wouldn't even be here. But I think that you fit upon something very real for me, which is that like, there are so many things in real life that are scarier. But just understanding that so deeply as a grown-up, I think has made horror way more fun for me and a lot scarier in that kind of sense because there are real-life things that freak me out way more. You know, thinking about that, you have cited your mother, Patricia, as the person who sparked your love of horror through her love of horror. And you've also outlined how horrific so many aspects of what her young life must have been like, was like, as somebody growing up and trying to push back on Jim Crow. How did you hold the realities of your family's history alongside your mother's love of horror and the horror movies and stories that you grew up with?
I used to think it was strange that my mother was this highly respected civil rights activist, very serious. If I was in college, I could find her name in my history books. Wow. If I was taking a contemporary history class. And this is the same woman who had me watching The Mummy and The Werewolf and The Fly and The Mole People and all these movies I was young. And I think for our family, horror has definitely been a way of dealing with trauma in a way that for people who don't get it will sound strange, but it's so healing. It's so healing. And I felt that my mother was able to heal some of her wounds by subjecting herself to horror movies where you can feel that little bit of a race of your heart. Mm-hmm. You see something on a screen that validates, yes, this is what the feeling I have inside of me looks like. And then breathe it out. And that was very much a part of our family. To me, horror and comedy are also two sides of a coin. And there are some similarities in the setups and payoffs. And the fact that it's so visceral, like a laugh.
Yeah.
It's so visceral. And a scream also is so visceral. It feels very personal, but it can't touch you.
The idea that a real life trauma, like you said, you can't be like, let me do a 10-second rewind or let me fast forward through this scene. But you ultimately are in the driver's seat, which is not always the case when you're dealing with something traumatic and scary and terrible in real life. It's like a controlled catharsis.
Yes, very well put. Controlled catharsis.
We've been talking a lot about the past. And as you said in the 2019 documentary, Horror Noir, you say Black history is Black horror. So we can all agree that the past was scary and is scary to unpack and think about in so many ways. But I want to turn toward the future.
Sure.
You also teach and have taught about Afrofuturism and have written speculative fiction. I wonder what futuristic themes are specifically ripe for Black horror.
Oh, that's interesting. And I love that we're blending Afrofuturism and horror, because horror and Afrofuturism are in the same family. It's the Black speculative arts is what Afrofuturism is. So that's science fiction, fantasy, horror, mm-hmm. comics. And what really draws me to horror in general, I think, is exactly the thing that is perfect for Blackness in terms of Afrofuturism and horror. And that is leadership models.
Speak to me. You're saying something. I just had a response.
Leadership.
Okay.
Models. Because in horror specifically, which is a survival situation, unless someone comes up with a good idea and knows how to execute it, all y'all are going to die. Including this protagonist, which sometimes happens in horror.
Yeah.
Sometimes everybody dies. So the leadership model. I mean, my theory, I haven't done any study on this, but my theory is that the more comfortable your upbringing has been, the fewer ancestral stories you have about running and hiding, the less you feel at risk if you're investigating a strange noise in the house, right? Like, because no one's ever.
Yeah, I'm seeing something there.
Right? Like, hello. Whereas with Black people, even if we don't have personal experience with that kind of trauma being chased, we have these stories. It's about leadership. It's about preparation. And every horror movie, most horror movies have a moment called the meeting. Mm-hmm. The meeting is when, let's say there's three or four people. Sure. They're in a house where everybody's having different experiences. Nobody telling each other what's going on because they all think they're crazy.
Yeah.
And then they finally start to share. Oh, this happened to me. And the gaslighting stops. I hate gaslighting in horror. I get it, but I hate it. Like, if someone says something happened, believe them. Believe Black women in horror. Okay. And then you can start coming up with a plan. Then we're all on the same reality map. And we can, like, you do this, you do this. Wasn't there an old dusty book? Maybe there's some secrets in there that will help us to, like, make a plan. And I think as more Black protagonists emerge in horror, we're just going to see more and more of those natural leadership models where you believe people's accounts, where you take precautions before you act, where you don't do silly things. And I think it'll be a really good trend for all horror if we start to see a little bit more of that experience of people who haven't had such a pampered life dealing with horror and horror elements.
Leadership modeling. That is something I'm going to be carrying with me for a while. I'm going to be thinking about that for a while. Tanana Reeve, thank you so much. It was such a joy to talk to you today.
Great talking to you too. This is fun. And thanks for doing this.
That was author and scholar Tanana Reeve Du. Her upcoming novel, The Reformatory, hits stores October 31st. Out There Screaming, an anthology of new Black horror, is out today. This episode of It's Been a Minute was produced by
Alexis Williams.
It was edited by
Jessica Plachek.
Engineering support came from
Becky Brown.
Our executive producer is
Verilyn Williams.
Our VP of programming is
Yolanda Sanguini.
Our senior VP of programming is
Anya Grundman.
All right. That's all for this episode of It's Been a Minute from NPR. I'm Brittany Luce. Talk soon.
Last year, over 20,000 people joined the Body Electric study to change their sedentary, screen-filled lives. And guess what?
We saw amazing effects.
Now you can try NPR's Body Electric Challenge yourself. Listen to updated and new episodes wherever you get your podcasts.
Support for NPR and the following message come from IXL Learning. IXL Learning uses advanced algorithms to give the right help to each kid, no matter the age or personality. Get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when you sign up today at IXL.com/NPR.